Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going behind the curtain a bit. We're looking at the high-level machinery that really keeps outdoor access in America running. We're going to be dissecting the infrastructure, the stuff that supports hunting, property stewardship, all of it.
And specifically, we're diving into this ongoing partnership between two really key organizations.
Right. The American Hunting Lease Association, or AHLA, and the Sportsman's Alliance.
And this isn't a new thing. Their relationship has been solid since 2018, but it's more than just an endorsement.
It seems like it's a really essential link. You have the practical, you know, land use industry on one side, and on the other, you have the political and legal defense that the entire industry needs to even exist.
That's a perfect way to put it.
Okay, so let's unpack this then. When you really look at the sources, you see two very different needs being met.
Completely different.
One group is managing what you could call the operational risk, the property, the structure.
And the other manages the existential risk. I mean, the actual legal right to operate at all.
Yeah.
We're going to get into the mechanics of both.
So where do we start? The foundation, I guess.
Let's start with the foundation. Mm-hmm. That's the American Hunting Lease Association, the AHLA.
Okay.
They were set up in 2010, and they had a very specific, very crucial job to serve the hunting lease industry. That's their niche.
So making sure that transaction, that relationship between the hunter and the landowner is sound.
Exactly. Not just beneficial, but legally and financially sound. Their whole philosophy is about facilitating stewardship.
Stewardship?
Yeah. They believe that a good hunter-landowner relationship, you know, one that's formalized with a properly executed lease.
Right. The paperwork.
That lease is the single best tool for preserving habitat and ensuring access is sustainable and, importantly, safe. Their job is to reduce the friction in that relationship.
That focus on mitigating operational risk is so key. They're not just, you know, selling a service. It feels like they're trying to standardize the best way to do things.
They are. And they're a huge source for free resources.
Like what?
Things like fully vetted lease agreement templates, educational tools for leasing. But the real engine, the most vital part, is their insurance.
Right. They promise to offer the most affordable and extensive hunting liability insurance policies on the market. That's a big claim.
It is a big claim. And you have to see how specialized those policies are. They really cover every angle of liability in that whole land use dynamic.
So it's not just for the hunters.
Oh, not at all. For the hunters or the club, they have hunting lease insurance and then separate policies for guides and outfitters.
Okay.
But, and this is critical, they also serve the person holding the land. They have vacant land insurance and, of course, the same hunting lease insurance from the landowner side.
So the whole partnership is covered. The hunter, the club, the landowner. If something goes wrong, everyone's protected.
That's the goal. A holistic safety net.
I thought the granularity of their business model was fascinating. The sources get really specific. Well, they publish their financial metrics. You can get an instant quote and they list prices as low as, what was it, 14 or 24 cents an acre per year.
Right. Very transparent.
But that precision also has these really interesting limits. The sources say there's a hard cutoff. If you want to cover more than seven landowners.
You have to call the office.
Yeah. You have to call for special pricing. Why seven? What's the risk model that lands on that specific number?
Well, that seven landowner threshold really shows the difference between standard recreational liability and something much more complex.
Like a commercial operation?
Sort of. Think of it this way. A standard club's liability can be based on acreage. It's a known quantity. But when you start pulling together multiple individual property owners, you multiply the potential for boundary disputes, different management plans, all kinds of liability exposures. It just becomes a higher risk category that needs a human to actually underwrite it.
So it moves beyond the instant standardized quote. That's a really sharp insight into how they view risk.
It is.
But all of that, the micro-level support, the leases, the per-acre costs, it's all kind of meaningless if the basic legal right to hunt is taken away.
Absolutely. It's a whole ballgame.
The AHLA's CEO, Doug Saunders, he put it perfectly. He said they support the Sportsman's Alliance because they, and I'm quoting here, advocate for and defend our right to enjoy the outdoors.
And that's the pivot.
So we shift from that operational risk we talked about to the existential risk. What is the alliance actually doing on the front lines?
To really get the scale of the Sportsman's Alliance, you have to look at their history. They didn't just appear as some huge national organization.
Where did they start?
Their roots are in a 1977 trapping issue in Ohio, a local fight. But that local fight showed very quickly that these seemingly small state-level actions can have massive national implications. So they evolved. They became the country's main advocate for sportsmen.
And their mission now?
It's multi-layered. They protect and defend America's wildlife conservation programs.
Oh.
And the pursuits that actually fund those programs. So hunting, fishing, trapping, shooting.
So they're defending the funding mechanism itself.
You got it. We're talking about the lifeblood of modern conservation here. The excise taxes on firearms, ammo, archery gear.
The Pittman-Robertson Act funding, PR funding.
Exactly. Our listeners will know it well. That revenue stream is what keeps conservation agencies afloat nationwide. And the Alliance fights tooth and nail to protect it.
And the scope of that fight is huge. The sources say they're in all 50 state legislatures, the courts, Congress, even at the ballot box.
They are the coordinated front line.
And they have a specific structure to do that, right? The foundation.
Yes, and their organizational architecture is really smart. It's important to see the distinction. They have a separate but coordinated entity, the Sportsman's Alliance Foundation.
And that separation is strategic. It has to be.
Highly intentional. The foundation is a separate nonprofit. Its job is public education, legal defense, and research.
And for anyone who knows how nonprofits work, that structure is critical. This is probably about their tax status, right? A 501c3 versus a 501c4.
Precisely. The foundation, which is likely the 501c3, can use tax-deductible charitable money for its education and research.
Which frees up the main organization.
Exactly. It allows the Alliance itself to focus all its non-deductible funds on the heavy lifting. The direct lobbying, the political advocacy, fighting legislation in all 50 states. It's a resource management strategy.
Maximizing their financial leverage.
Against opponents who are often very well funded themselves.
Okay, so let's connect the dots. We have AHLA managing the micro risk, the leases, and we have the Alliance with this sophisticated legal and political defense. How do they actually work together? What's the binding force?
The interdependence is immediate. I mean, it's profound. HLA's entire business model, their revenue from leases and insurance, it completely depends on their customers being legally able to do the things they insure.
So HLA supporting the Alliance is basically business self-preservation.
It is. Access is useless if the legal right to hunt is regulated out of existence by anti-hunting laws.
And the sources really emphasize that this is an escalating fight.
Right. The Alliance's need for strong financial partners grows stronger as the animal rights and anti-hunting movements get stronger and better funded.
So this isn't a static environment.
Not at all. It's an arms race of political influence, really.
And that's where the money from partners like AHLA, who are actually monetizing the industry, becomes indispensable.
Oh, it is.
Brian Dowler, he's the VP of membership for the Alliance, had a great quote on this. He said, "They are a small organization that manages to punch way above its weight when we fight the anti-hunting and trapping movement."
And that's not just rhetoric.
It can't be. It means their limited staff and budget are being dramatically extended by that sustained industry-backed funding from partners like AHLA. And it seems like AHLA is doing more than just cutting a check. If you look at the other topics on their own website, conservation, land management, even tree stand safety, they're reinforcing the very ethos the Alliance is fighting to protect.
That's a fantastic synthesis. They're establishing the standard of responsibility
that the Alliance can then go and defend politically.
That's it. AHLA provides the evidence that the industry is responsible, it's insured, it's focused on stewardship.
And the Alliance takes that evidence, plus the funding, to make the case that these activities should continue because they're regulated, responsible, and they generate revenue for conservation.
Perfect circle.
So to recap for everyone listening, we've really identified two critical but separate roles here. HLA is managing the operational risk.
The infrastructure backbone.
Right. The templates, the insurance, the safe access model. And the Sportsman's Alliance is managing the existential risk.
The legal and political defense. They make sure that PR funding stays viable and the right to even do these things remains intact.
So this all raises a really important question for you to think about.
Go on.
The infrastructure we've just detailed. The specific financial models from AHLA, the Alliance's nonprofit structure, the total reliance on Pittman-Robertson, it's incredibly specialized, and you could argue it's fragile.
These organizations spend all their time and money just defending the right to access and that funding model.
So here's the final thought.
Right.
Reflect on the origins we talked about. The Alliance started back in 77 over a local trapping issue in Ohio that blew up into a national thing.
Right. A small spark.
So given today's hyper-connected, fast-moving digital world, what local issue out there right now, maybe a municipal zoning challenge about predator management or land access, what small thing could spark the next major national crisis for our outdoor heritage?
A crisis that would demand an immediate response from this very specialized infrastructure we've been talking about.
Exactly. The defense so often has to start right where that insurance premium is paid. Something for you to think about.